Hello, you are listening to CITR Docs Season 3, Keep It Local, a collection of audio documentaries that explore current affairs topics in Vancouver and the Lower Mainland. These documentaries were made by producers at CITR 101.9 FM, the University of British Columbia's campus and community radio station, located on unceded Coast Salish Musqueam territory. This series was made possible by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada. To hear more CITR Docs from this season or previous seasons, look up CITR Docs on Stitcher or iTunes, or visit citr.ca/docs.
In 2016, Jeanne made headlines after dropping out of UBC to start a nonprofit advocating for better mental health services in post-secondary institutions. Many have heard her story, but few know where it's at now. This audio documentary will bring you up to date on the tipping point by exploring the public's perception of Jeanne's infallible courage and tenacity. Aftermath by Cheryl Liu and Sam Pang is a story about the harsh truth of mental health and Jeanne's own ongoing journey for inner well-being.
I remember in January 2016, I was sitting on my friend's bed and I Googled college dropout, like what to do to drop out of school. And I felt silly, I felt a little amused, and also I felt horrified at the same time. My name is Jeanne Kim. I'm well known as the founder of a nonprofit organization called the Tipping Point Mental Health Society. My background is that I dropped out of university due to mental health challenges, and I am now starting a personal coaching business addressing the issue of student burnout.
When Jeanne walked into the little recording studio at CITR, we saw a young Asian woman with large glasses framing her endearingly round, bare face. Her baggy sweatshirt emphasized her small stature, but it hid the fact that she is an amateur powerlifter.
I love acro yoga. I'm also a big Rec Beach enthusiast, so I'll be visiting Rec Beach every weekend in the summer. And chai lattes. Always chai lattes.
For the last 2 years, Jeanne has been known as that girl who dropped out of UBC to create the Tipping Point. But when you meet her, it's apparent she's much more than that. Her mental health journey has continued beyond her moment in the spotlight in 2016, and her story goes beyond her identity as a mental health advocate. However, she's totally in tune with how and why her mental health deteriorated in the first place, and has worked towards unraveling the complexities that has caused her internal strife. Jeanne was born in Korea, where mental health is perceived differently.
My family immigrated here when I was 5 years old, and I've been living in Southeast Van. Where my parents come from, mental illness does not exist. It's about shame. So my mom flipped her shit when I transferred from science to arts. By the time I was ready to drop out of school, neither my parents were happy about it, but they accepted it. They understood that I was too sick to do school and there was just not a point.
Jeanne had decided to drop out. But she didn't want to face the mass of same questions asked over and over again and the feeling of shame that followed her answers. So she wrote a post, intending to update her friends. Instead, it went viral, and the unexpected support poured in.
After the 10th or 11th, like, all the other compliments felt like empty compliments, because I was like, okay, yeah, I'm courageous. Okay, yeah, I'm vulnerable. I still feel shitty. But then there was this one comment where she said, thank you for doing this. You are making an impact. That, oh man, yeah. I remember exactly how I felt and like where I was and who I was crying with. And like my friend was crying with me, for me.
Initially, with all the messages of support, Jeanne felt an overwhelming sense that she wasn't alone. But that soon turned to anger, that it was that common and nothing was being done to change it. Jeanne felt a sense of responsibility to do something and started the Tipping Point.
The Tipping Point is a nonprofit organization that focuses on mental health academia in the most general sense. It started off as a movement to encourage post-secondary institutions to change their academic policies to better support student mental health. Over time, I quickly realized that institutional change is going to take fucking forever. And I am one person, and especially the fact that I am no longer an official part of the UBC community, I have no say. And so although my biggest motivator in the beginning and is still my biggest vision is to influence academic policies change in educational institutions, we've had to kind of come down to, unfortunately, the awareness level.
Feeling stuck at this level, Jian wasn't sure what the right next step was and how to even bring it to the next level. Enter her mentors, two people she met at an opportune time.
His name is John Wang. He's kind of one of those guys where, like, his friends don't even know what he does. I remember it was December 1st, and he said, okay, January 29th, you're going to launch your program. Come back next week. We're going to go for dinner and have a curriculum. Yeah, so for the next 2 months, I was crying on his apartment floor every week because the self-doubt was so real. I was struggling with the identity of, like, I am a mentally ill college dropout, and I was so tied to that. What? I can help people, I can teach people, I can guide people through things and make money from it. That blew my mind. But knowing John and how much value his work is, that he was, and the knowledge that he holds, and he was giving it to me all for free, and he's like, you can't give that away for free. Like, that is of so much value. And another mentor who I have, his name is Mark Anthony, he was the first adult that made me believe in unconditional love. A member from the Tony Robbins team was at that conference and was selling tickets to his next event called Unleash the Power Within for half price. So, like, a $1,000 ticket for $500. And I was like, oh my goodness, that is amazing, but it's in LA, so I can't go. And Mark Antony was like, do you really want to go to this? And I was like, I would freaking love to go to this, but it's in LA. And he just, like, whipped out his phone and started booking my flights for me. So he booked my flights for me, like, to and fro from LA for this conference, who, like, Mark Antony doesn't even like Tony Robbins, but he wanted me to have that, go through that experience, and he wanted to support me in some way. So, like, it's like, you just met me yesterday and you have so much faith in me to do this for me. Like, that is amazing. Mark Anthony is a marketing consultant for Fortune 100 companies. So he charges $25,000 for a 1 day workshop. And he was giving me, like, 1 hour, 2 hour phone calls every other week. And so, like, that I can't. John was like, you can't give that away for free. Like, this knowledge is so valuable and it will change lives. So make money out of it. So I was like, okay.
John and Mark pushed Jian towards personal development work, which led to the creation of Tip Labs. But there was another reason that Jian started to stray away from mental advocacy.
I identify with a tipping point too much. It became my baby. And so to tie entrepreneurship or, like, a career to my mental illness was really toxic for me. So I wanted to separate my career from mental illness because I was so sick of talking about mental illness for so long. And in that light, I wanted to separate my career from that because personal development is something that can be addressed for anyone. To put coaching with mental illness together doesn't work, because that's really the premise of, like, the difference between coaching and counseling is that counseling deals with the past and with like, diagnoses, whereas coaching has to do with the present moment of, like, creating strategies for right now to where you want to go. So I wanted to separate that self-care and performance conversation from the mental illness conversation.
Something that Jian struggled with was the pricing of her services.
When I first started the program, it was more of, like, what do workshops charge? And by the hour, like, how much value am I providing by the hour? And then just calculating that. But now I've been changing things of not looking at things hourly. It's like, there's a term called price value. If you love the design of this mug, you are willing and you're willing to pay $20, doesn't mean that I'm willing to pay $20 for this, because I don't like the aesthetics of this mug, but you might love the aesthetics of this mug. We have different price values attached. So given the time that I put into educating myself in all of this, given the time and emotional energy that I put into my clients, and also the amount of transformation that they are going to go through, that's how I decide on my prices. In the beginning, one way of looking at it was like, when I was going through what I did and someone came to me and said, this is what we can do, I can help you with this, and it costs this much, would I have paid that? Abso-fucking-lutely.
What Jeanne didn't expect was that the public would struggle with her pricing as well. On January 2018, there was a post on the subreddit r/UBC, a forum dedicated to all subjects related to the University of British Columbia on Reddit. An unidentified user wrote a PSA on the tipping point, saying that
this service is less scientific than acupuncture and drinking ginseng. The worst part is that they charge hundreds of dollars for what you can get for free at a support group. This group is honestly disgusting, and I can't even believe this is something that's being supported. The founder is essentially profiting off of people in mental distress.
And the following 38 comments? Well, they weren't pretty.
The Tip Labs appears to be essentially a pyramid scheme, with the founder using dropout status to attempt to bolster her
credibility. I never really liked Jeanne for this exact reason. I didn't want to say it before because she never did anything explicitly wrong, but she basically used her dropout/suicide attempts and whatever else to always gain attention, and even put ex-friends like myself down. Like, anyone that didn't go through what she did was somehow lesser. I'm relieved that I'm not the only one who felt this way. I'm horrified to find out that it's apparently following a for-profit
model. I find her
model.
Business practice extremely manipulative and unfair and predatory to those who truly need help. This may sound harsh, but based on my history with her, I think this is a smart but immoral way to make money despite dropping out of school. She simply couldn't handle the course load of science 1, her parents paid for an 8-month trip to Thailand, then paid for her to move out. I'm not undermining her mental health issues in any way, but based on my years of being acquainted with her, I have my doubts on the tipping point.
The negativity hit Jeanne hard.
I freaked the fuck out. The first thing I did when I read through like the main part, I didn't read through the comments, and I called John right away. And I've had one hater before, like a single person, since day one, since I published The Tipping Point. And I remember John at that time, he said to me, like, congratulations. It means you're real. And it means someone gives a fuck about you. That's better than apathy. Apathy is so much easier, but if someone is actually putting in the energy to have an opinion on you, that means in their minds you exist and you are saying something so big that is seriously emotionally affecting them. That was one. And then this Reddit thread was a few dozen. I was like horrified by the fact that I had more haters than clients, but it was also a big wake-up call in the sense that at that time, beginning of January, I had an elevated ego. So it was kind of a wake-up call to be like, slow down. You're just getting started. You're not phenomenal at what you do. You're still learning. And the first few things that you do are gonna be crap, and that's okay. But you are going to do this for 10 years, so you are allowed to take the time to build your foundations, your professional foundations. And by the time you're 32, you'll be good at it. What hurt the most was that I recognized a few of the people who were like acquaintances or past supporters, or even a few, I'm gonna use the term ex-friends or friends that we've had to end our relationships with. That hurt the most because there were a few people who I knew still loved me, but we hadn't maintained a relationship for a while. But the fact that they would contribute to an anonymous Reddit thread rather than just asking me, like, that really hurt. It was also really painful the way people see nonprofits. Like, we need money to run nonprofit organizations. If I did not have the socioeconomic privilege that I did, the Tipping Point would not have existed. I know a few of the comments on there did point that out, of you're such a privileged girl living off of your parents' money. Like, yeah, I am, and I'm trying to do the best that I can with it by creating this movement and starting these conversations. And I'm very grateful for the fact that I've had this privilege. I've always mentioned it, like, on every interview I've done. And I did make a little bit of money with that first cohort of students, but that it was still a net loss, all the hours that went into that. And I think I deserve minimum wage, at least, doing the work that I do. Like, it came down to that. It was like me standing up for myself of, I am deserving of minimum wage doing this work. Like, I have literally saved lives, and I am deserving of making minimum wage.
Jian realized that the main conflict centered around what fell under nonprofit, what under for-profit, and why she had to make the switch.
A business, a for-profit business, is different from a nonprofit organization. I want to build a business that can grow bigger and bigger and bigger. It is not dependent on government funds. And nonprofit status versus charity status is a huge difference. It takes years to get charity status, and it's really freaking difficult to get charity status. And I want to be able to sustain myself before then, and I want to be able to make impact before then. But in order to make sustainable impact, I need to sustain myself. And I can't, like, yes, I am privileged, you know, like, girl living off her parents, but I don't want to. Like, I want to be financially independent. I just wish that when people look at nonprofits and how they work, I wish people could see that there's actual, like, real people putting in real hours of work into creating things. Things take way more time than it looks. And there are all these other expenses that go too, like graphics and a website and incorporating. Like, there's all these other expenses. And so I see why there was an anger. And I understand that Tip Labs was not considered an accessible program, but it also has to do with commitment and priority. University students are all paying that huge amount of money because they see that education as an investment and a priority. My clients see this work as a priority, and you might not, and that's okay. That just means that this service is not for you, but that doesn't mean other people don't need it. Something that I really need to learn to stand up for myself is I wanted to do activism. Like, we have this in our minds that social workers and activists, they're expected to do the work that they do with no payment. And fighting for those things is so emotionally taxing. That is emotional labor, and it literally can kill you. My activism literally almost killed me. Reality is, I never wanted to do mental health advocacy, ever. It is so exhausting to fight for something that affects you on a daily basis, and it feels like you're fending yourself every single day, and it feels like you're fighting for your basic right to exist and live and thrive. But I took on the Tipping Point because I saw it as a responsibility, as like, I chose to put my story out there, people responded, I'm going to take responsibility for that, and I could just drop it, but I know that it is a conversation that is needed, and right now, no one else is really doing it. But I am actually thinking about taking a break. I'm so exhausted. I haven't had a static team for almost a year now. It's been me and one or two people who have been on and off. But ever since I started, every single person who has helped me with this organization, everyone lives with mental illness. How do you lead a team is one question. How do you lead a team who all live with mental illness while accommodating their mental illness while also making sure to get shit done?
So what's in store for Jian next?
I'm interested in this next step of my life where I've been doing a lot of mental health healing and a lot of personal development work. Next step is professional development. Seeing how I grow as a professional woman, whatever the hell that means, will be interesting.
Special thanks to Ji-Yan Kim for volunteering to take part in this audio documentary and to CITR for the opportunity to create it. And we'd also like to thank Alex Dubois for guiding us through this entire creative process. This short documentary was created by Cheryl Liu and Samantha Peng. The music used is from YouTube's free audio library, including the song I Want to Fall in Love on Snapchat by Chris Zabriskie from chriszabriskie.com/DTV. We hope you enjoyed listening to this as much as we enjoyed creating it. Thank you.